You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Bob Bruce, author of Human Understanding, an Engineer's Analysis of Life, Getting to the Basics. Bob, how are you doing today?
Very good, thank you.
Awesome, thank you for being here. And you wrote quite a book, man, that is huge.
There's a lot in it because I think it teaches, it goes into psychology, philosophy, spirituality, quite a number of subjects.
Yeah, you have hit on a lot of things. So the first thing that I wanted to ask you is what made you decide to write the book? What was the goal?
The goal is to understand life. It actually started as a search of my own.
Oh, really? Okay.
After some events in my life, particularly my son, Andrew, had cancer and died back in 1986.
Okay, sorry.
And then followed up with the divorce a couple of years later, which is common, actually. About 90% of marriages where there's the death of a young child end up with a divorce within 2 years.
Holy cow.
I never know that statistic at the time. There's a lot of things I wanted to understand about life.
Sure.
Kind of all these things kind of upset my understanding of life, so I started doing some research about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And put a lot of ideas together and over the years. And then finally, a couple of years ago, somebody said, Bob, why didn't you put all those ideas into a book? And so I finally did.
So the publication date is 2017, right?
Yes.
Okay, so how long did it take you to write this?
Off and on for about 25 years.
Okay, so just keeping notes and stuff like that?
Most of them, I'd say half of it was done back in the first 2 years, back in the early 90s. And the rest of it was all done in the last few years before the book.
Okay. In the early 90s, when you were keeping track of your notes and thoughts and all that jazz, was the intention to someday write a book and publish it, or just have the notes for yourself, more or less?
More or less for myself at the time. I didn't understand. I guess I always say that people are, put into a situation because of the parents or their upbringing, which they're almost programmed to be a certain person.
Sure.
And I didn't understand a lot of this myself. And so my concept of what life was supposed to be about was really nice. I'd had it really easy early in my life. And I kind of assumed that things were going to go my way. Well, they didn't.
Right.
And obviously then what you want to do is you want to figure out what's going wrong, or how do you get to make everything go right?
Sure.
And I ended up writing different things down for probably maybe a year. I didn't have a radio, television, or newspaper. All I did was sit down and write and start thinking about life and what's important about life and what makes sense.
Sure.
And what I really didn't want to do, I didn't want to get involved with, I don't care if there's UFOs or not, aliens, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
I didn't care what religion, a lot of these things. I wanted to put something together that made sense, regardless of all these different parameters.
Sure.
Because of the fact that there's so many things that somebody says, this should be this way, or this is the right religion, or whatever it is. Things can't always be what everybody thinks they are. So I wanted to have some simplified way of looking at life, all the different things related to life, in a simple way that makes sense.
Yeah, I forget that quote. It's like if everybody agrees with you, one of you is wrong. Something like that. Had to be a Mark Twain thing. Doesn't matter.
Well, there's another one. I always like it. It's the way I have in the book. Is that if everybody has an annoying neighbor, and if you don't have an annoying neighbor, you're it.
You're the annoying neighbor. Luckily, in my neighborhood, I am clearly not the annoying neighbor because I think everyone else around me is. Maybe not everyone. Doesn't matter. So the book has been around for a year and a half, something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, about 2 years now.
Okay. So let's walk through publishing, because that's always interesting from author to author. I'm curious about that. Did you self-publish? Did you have to dig around and find a publisher? How did you take care of that?
I just happened to call the Henschel House as, okay. as far as the for because it's the person had a TV, had different ways of informing authors. She gave classes about different things that you needed to do to be an author.
Sure.
Important things in the book.
Okay.
Also about getting how to get your name out in the,
sure.
the field, which I didn't pay any attention to. None of which. But what I did was I did talk to the Kira, who okay. was in charge, and she was a publisher, and I got in charge, in touch with her, and I sent her a copy of what I wanted to publish, and
okay.
She said, fine, looks really good.
Okay. So you essentially sent her a manuscript. Now, was this you paid her, or she paid you, or how did that work? Because I know publishers, some work one, some work the other way.
No, we just signed a contract about where the money would go with the books, and that's
okay.
So I wasn't paying her. She
gotcha.
Was just publishing my book for
okay.
me.
Okay, nice.
I suppose he could have published it on Amazon or some other place, but
sure.
I went through Henschel House. I liked the books, the type of book that she was promoting,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I just went with Kira.
Very cool. Very cool. So is Henschel House out of Milwaukee?
Yeah, well, it is out of Milwaukee, yes.
Okay, because I think we've interviewed some other authors that used Henschel House. So what have been your sales since it came out? Have they been good, what you expected? Okay, do you even pay attention to them? Or?
I really didn't pay much attention to them. Haven't received any major
there wasn't a
book.
Random...
I mean, it's royalties or anything else, so obviously...
No $5 million check in the mail, wondering where this came from.
$50 check,
mm-hmm.
More like it. Someday I would hope to break even, but I don't think I ever will.
Sure.
But I'm going to say, I have had very good success when I go to a library and talk,
mm-hmm.
that over half the people come up afterwards and ask for a book.
Oh, well, that's good.
Which apparently I express things that they find very interesting that are
sure.
in the book.
Sure. Well, that's good. That means that you have a captive audience there, so that's
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, the people have nobody has been leaving anyway.
Okay. That's how you know that you really tanked, right? When
yeah.
the people at the library don't stick around about your book.
Well, one of the things in the book is I try to approach every topic in a way that other people haven't thought about.
Sure. So now this book, one of the interesting things about this book is you cover so many topics. You got relationships, you got exercise. I think you talk about climate change in there. Like, if there's a topic, it's in there. So how did you decide what topics to include? And are there some that just didn't make the cut?
Well, no, there was a couple different things. First of all, I wanted to get you in the first part of the book was understanding how people think.
Mm-hmm.
And how, to a certain degree, we're programmed into the way we think.
Yeah, a lot of people don't.
And how we develop our habits of thought.
Sure.
And which we live then in a reality that was based on somewhat what we've programmed to do. And we stick within that reality until we decide we want to get out of it and start thinking on our own.
Sure.
And that's one of the basics of this book is to try to get people to think beyond
sure.
what they've been, so to say, programmed to think.
The red pill or the blue pill, right?
Right. So that's the first thing. And then I started talking about concepts in reality, because
mm-hmm.
reality is kind of what you think it is to a certain degree.
Sure.
I got a little bit into quantum mechanics
information right.
and different things associated
mm-hmm.
with reality, because...
Mm-hmm.
At the below the atomic level, things don't follow the concepts that Einstein
sure.
had,
right.
and things come in the end. Things come back down to pretty much everything is a matter of energy and speed.
Sure,
including us, and we're basically it's consciousness causes things to basically develop into material as we see it.
Sure,
and I tried to bring out that. Point not to say there's anything wrong with material, whatever it is,
right.
but just to point, and because it's real to us, there's no question what we see is real to us.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that we don't understand, it's important to realize that you cannot really understand everything that is. And when you finally understand that you don't understand...
We can't even understand the tax code. So understanding all of this is just outside of our realm.
That's what the whole object is, to get people to understand so that they are willing to look a different way at certain things that they thought were the one way that they had to be. Maybe they don't have to be that way.
Sure. So what was the big trigger? Was this something that you wrote for your kids or something you wrote for coworkers? Or I imagine, I can tell you from when I wrote my book, a lot of it was wishing that my clients knew somewhat of a foundation about business and entrepreneurship and stuff like that.
When I got involved and decided to put into a book, first of all, I did have a book publisher take a look, not a publisher, a person who reviewed books take a look at it.
Okay.
And it came back and some marks in it, and it just doesn't seem right. I mean, there was lots of things that were not organized in a way that was going to go anywhere.
Sure.
And so then I started thinking about what is important. And like I said, at first it was the concept of how we develop our thought. Then we get into relativity. And then how things in our lives, the various things that we do or think, are related to reality and the way we think. And that's where we get into relationships. And,
sure.
But the two important things, the most important things that I came up with in life is the concept of control, mm-hmm. which I consider a vice, probably the most biggest vice there is. We try to control other things.
Give me an example.
People that are too domineering, mm-hmm. they'll screw up their relationships.
Okay.
They want this, they want that.
Sure.
And they aren't going to be happy. The other one was acceptance. They aren't going to necessarily be happy because they always want something that they can't. If you can't control everything, you're never going to be really happy.
Sure.
And so when I talked about acceptance was the other thing. I've always, in the book, I've talked about the two things that are most important for happiness. And one is that the concept that you have a worth.
Okay.
It's not self-confidence or ego or anything. It's the fact that you're worth something.
Sure.
And the funny thing about self-worth is you really never feel self-worth until you're worthy of something to somebody else.
Uh-huh. Okay. Interesting.
It's kind of funny. When you feel you're doing the right thing, you know that you're doing the right thing, you feel self-worth. Because there's a lot of people that made millions and have all kinds of ego, and they committed suicide.
Sure.
I mean, but if they had really feeling that they're worth something, why would they want even think
success
about doing it?
Success without fulfillment is failure. Sure.
And the other thing that you need for happiness is to be able to accept. My definition of happiness is the acceptance of what is.
Sure.
The more you can accept, the appreciation of what is. The more you can appreciate what something is, the mm-hmm. more happier you're going to be.
Sure.
I always give the example of, let's say, kid's graduating from school. He's got a probably C minus average. He's just going to graduate.
I can relate to this guy.
Okay. The mom and dad are upset. He should have done so much better.
Sure.
And the grandparents, I think, wonderful he graduated.
Sure.
And they're appreciating so much more.
You get the piece of paper.
my son graduated. Wonderful. And somebody can appreciate it more than the other. They're going to be a lot happier. And
certainly. So, there's a perception there, right? So
correct.
Different angle, sure.
And how you perceive things and the amount of appreciation that you have mm-hmm. on anything in your life, mm-hmm. the happier you're going to be. And you don't have to be wealthy. You just have to learn to appreciate all the small things.
Sure.
I mentioned earlier that I fell down a little while ago and broke a finger.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, recently, I've been tripping a little bit more and falling a little bit more. I don't know why, but
sure.
This one taught me a lesson. and recently, I've been not falling because I've been a lot more careful.
All right.
Now, you can look at it and say, too bad you broke your finger. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, you know, that was a good warning. You could have fallen down the stairs if you weren't more careful. Maybe that finger was that you should appreciate the finger, although I lost 2 months of playing golf. but maybe I saved myself a fall down the stairs and a much more tragic thing.
Sure.
It depends upon how you want to accept what he is.
Right.
And actually appreciate the things that sometimes go wrong.
I always tell my son that there, every time you get hurt, you know, you see blood or something like that on yourself, you have to learn from that so you don't bleed more. Because in the end, we're constantly learning. If you're not learning, you're either dead or just not paying attention. So you just, every time he gets hurt, and then you joke with him, right? Oh, your finger hurts, and he'll be just like this tragic thing for a little scrape. And I'm like, do we have to cut off the hand? Because then that finger won't hurt anymore if you cut off the hand. And she says, no.
Yeah, my daughter, one time, we were taking a bicycle on a bicycle trail, and for some reason, I sort of went off the blacktop trail, and my bike hit the quad, and I went right over the front end of the bike.
Oh, no.
Scraped my shoulder pretty bad. It was sure. bleeding. And my daughter, who had been very afraid of blood, for some reason,
she's full of it. Can't be that scary.
She was... I said, this is nothing. I said, yeah. Let's keep on going.
Right.
Finish up the ride.
Rub some dirt on it.
And she said, I said, blood doesn't make you, I mean, it isn't going to be anything different. I'm going to eventually get back, take care of it. It doesn't make any difference. Is it blood there or not? I'm not going to die from it.
Right.
And she took a lesson from that.
Well, that's good. That's very good. So going back to the book, you arranged it in three sections, is that correct?
Four sections.
Four main sections, okay. How did you decide what sections were going to be what? Because you cover so much in the book.
Well, the first one was obviously, I think people need to understand how they think and why.
Okay.
I think that was most important. The next thing I wanted to do, the concept of the concepts of reality are a lot have related to what you think.
Okay.
And then I wanted to point out one of the biggest important aspects of this book is the concept of an independent consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I point out in the book that some people call a soul, whatever he calls it.
Sure.
I call it independent consciousness.
Okay. You're talking about subconscious or something different?
I'm talking about independent consciousness, independent of the brain, and which goes on and continues on.
Oh, okay.
You might even say reincarnation, whatever you want to call it.
Sure, okay.
And I called it the reality of an independent consciousness.
Okay.
And I consider the brain basically a major computer, fancy computer.
Sure.
But it's another aspect of being human, and that is that there's an independent consciousness.
Okay.
That it also is within us, that has an influence on our brain.
Okay.
And I bring that up in the book. I bring it up particularly. I said one of the most important things would be that, I mean, way of deciding whether it exists or not.
Sure.
Would be is if there is a concept of reincarnation. Because if reincarnation exists, then obviously consciousness goes on beyond physical death.
Sure.
And so I started bringing up some of the aspects of why reincarnation is not actually in Western society, whereas all societies for many, many years, whether it be Eastern or even Western, thought about the concept of reincarnation. As a matter of fact, one of the original doctors of the Christian Church, Origen, basically said that wrote a book and talked about the preexistence of souls.
Okay.
That they preexist before time.
Sure.
And but what ended up happening is that it gave the story about Emperor Justinian,
mm-hmm.
who didn't like this concept. He had a lot of problems. He actually was the guy who outlawed a teaching of philosophy in Athens.
Okay.
He just didn't like
it. Odd place to stop philosophy from being taught.
Yeah. And what this was in the 532, I believe, when he did that.
Okay.
Then he was a ruthless emperor. Earlier in his reign as the Eastern emperor out of Constantinople,
mm-hmm.
he had a lot of detractors, and so he invited them all into the Hippodrome to discuss on a pretense of discuss. When they were all in there, he had the doors locked and everybody killed.
Oh, well, there you go.
They said as many as 30,000, possibly exaggerated number of 30,000 people.
Nobody knows. That is a lot of people.
Who knows how many there were. But I'm sure that number was exaggerated. Now, this is the emperor who then didn't like the concept of reincarnation because the people were didn't care if they thought they were going to come back anyway. So he is the emperor called the second Christian of Constantinople.
Okay.
And Council of Constantinople. And he also wanted to make sure that a couple of the previous chapters in the previous church council were reversed.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically called this council together. And he had the Pope kidnapped from Sicily, brought over. First of all, to make sure that he had the Pope did what he wanted, and the Pope would put in jail for about 8 years. And finally, the Pope agreed to his council. And actually, when the council was called, it was the Pope boycotted it because of the fact that most everybody there was an Eastern was from the Eastern Empire with the bishops,
mm-hmm.
and they were all appointed by the Bishop of Constantinople, was appointed by Justinian the Emperor.
Sure.
So it was boycotted.
Interesting.
And they, this is the one that outlawed the teachings of Origen and the concept of preexistence of souls.
Sure.
And that's where the out of Christianity, it got outlawed from Christianity.
Sure.
And as Western Empire developed into Christianity,
mm-hmm.
it, the whole concept of reincarnation was lost to Christianity and Western civilization.
Sure.
And
so how does, like, I don't know either way if reincarnation is a thing or not. But one thing I have been curious about from an analytical point of view is with reincarnation, that is to say that if I die, then I'm reincarnated as whatever. Does that mean that there's a finite number of souls that are just continually churned?
I want to say I don't know.
Okay.
I wouldn't know about that. But if you read the book, you'll find out some very interesting statistics of how
you know, it's interesting you ask about me reading the book because I got a week and a half and I read most of it, but at a super fast pace. I remember I want to talk a little bit about you talked about climate change, which is interesting. So can we touch on that a little bit? So you just remind me what you wrote in there.
I said basically the statistics related to climate change do show that statistically, humans could be very much responsible for climate change. However, I also point out that climate change has been going on for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
The year 1000, they were farming on Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
And that the raise in temperature that the 50 years before that, it was every bit as fast as it's been recently.
Sure.
That 8,000 years ago, or 4,000 years ago, the ocean was a couple feet higher, actually a couple meters higher than it is now. So,
no Florida.
I'm going to say, I mean, the polar bears lived through that.
Sure.
I'm sure that the climate has changed. Actually, a lot of the more recent testings, because a lot of this concept of climate change being man as a responsibility came back out of information from the 1990s in testing.
Sure.
And in the 2010s, there's a lot more information coming out and showing how erratic climate change has actually been. It's going up and down
mm-hmm.
quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just man, and it's a lot of this occurred when man was not around.
Sure.
I give you another, one of the things they're all talking about possibly is space. Effect gamma space radiation from space does affect the cloud formation in the central part of the globe, which does have an effect on temperature.
Sure.
Another one I thought was really interesting over in Spain, which I didn't get in the book, was there's a large area which they go grow flowers, and miles and miles of white tops. They have plastic over the top of it. It's right temperature, but they don't want too much direct sun. And it's interesting that the average temperature in that area is more than a degree below the average around surrounding temperatures because they reflect the sun.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that, and then you think about all the black highways we put on and the dark roofs we put on and how much more we're absorbing,
sure.
It's not just maybe from the standpoint of carbon emissions, but some of the other ways we actually are affecting. I can't tell you that we're definitely we are affecting the globe. I believe we are, but we should be realized that's not the only factor.
Sure. So the reason I brought up the climate change thing is because I think from, and you can tell me if I'm wrong with this, but the point that I got in your book is think on your own. But then me, from the coaching point of view, I think you have to act. So if you believe or don't believe in climate change or whatever, but you still have to make a decision, right? My point of view is if you don't make a decision, that's still a decision, right?
Well,
so when you decide what car should I buy or should I recycle this aluminum can or not, like, oh, it doesn't matter, the world's going to pot anyways.
No, I definitely think that man is involved with it.
Okay.
But I'm upset with it because that school system over in Portland, Oregon was basically outlawed any text or that talked about any cause for temperature change other than what man has been responsible for.
And sure.
That's kind of, to me, like telling the world, people, what the government telling them what religion you're supposed to belong to.
Sure.
I don't like this idea of telling people. I was talking about being programmed before, and mm-hmm. again, I'm thinking we're being programmed by telling us climate change is caused by this type one thing,
mm-hmm.
Carbon emissions.
Sure.
But I'm saying it probably is. But there are so many other causes. Don't say it's just that one thing.
But so the reason I ask that is because in the end, a kid has to make a decision from the rest, like many decisions over the course of their life, about what they're going to do and if they care about the environment or not. And if they don't believe that climate change is really man-based and, hey, it's going to happen anyways, they're going to make some decisions that could lead to pollution. Regardless of climate change, you're still making a mess.
Well, there's going to be a mess regardless. I mean, we are producing so much energy, and you wonder why it's just heating. Think about all the energy that we're using, and we're putting not just the carbon emissions, but mm-hmm. how much heat we're putting into the things that we burn.
Sure.
We put that in, and when then all of a sudden the glaciers start melting.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the icebox effects is falling away. We aren't even getting that. We're doing a lot of this ourselves. Mm-hmm. I do believe that, but I just got upset with the idea of the school system trying to control what people think.
So, what would be your solution?
I don't have any solution to it.
the kids need to go to school, though, so they need something.
Well, my solution is basically say, this is a very possible, probable cause.
Okay.
And we should look at that aspect of it as a contributing factor.
Okay.
And do everything we can within our power to reduce the things that we think are causing it.
Sure.
But don't believe just that one thing is a cause.
The one thing being man.
Yeah, man. Okay. Or even pollution.
Okay.
It's not just air pollution. It's like I said, the color that we put on our highways and roofs. Maybe it's the gamma rays that we got from outer space, but I don't know. I'm going to say, but we got to do our part to reduce our emissions, and that would be very helpful.
I always wondered about the black roofs. That seems like the dumbest thing in the world to me. One, that they're shingles, so it seems like we're just adding a bunch of holes to something that you're trying to stop from leaking.
That's for sure.
Something that can, a bunch of pieces that can grab wind when you want them to stay put, and they're just a mess. I just think there's nothing smart about an asphalt shingled roof.
Well, that the other aspect I have is that we talk about energy, and one of the problems I have is we think about we got more oil, but what someday we're going to run out of oil.
Yeah.
And we better start thinking about doing something to produce energy without oil.
Mm-hmm.
And we better do it pretty quickly. Because it's going to be quicker than you think.
Yeah.
That's going to end up being the thing that comes back to bite us.
Right. You know, it's interesting. When I was a kid, I used to watch Transformers, a little cartoon of the robots that turned from cars into robots and all this kind of stuff. Anyways, I remember these cartoon bad guys were going on oil rigs and stealing these cubes of Energon. We're talking early 1980s. the early 1980s, these Transformers were pointing out a problem that we're having now. And I'm like, what? Like, when you're a kid, you don't realize, like, oh, they're just stealing stuff, so they got to stop stealing stuff, whatever. So it's interesting that the 1980s, these little robot Transformers figured this out well before we did. So let's talk about something else in your book. You talk about relationships, which is a big nut. So tell me about that portion of your book and what you learned and what portions you decided to put in there.
Well, what happens is we, as I mentioned, we are sort of programmed in what we want in life.
Mm-hmm.
What's a reality of what's going to be happiness. And we look for it, and we look for it in the individual that we're looking for or is one that is going to most satisfy what we think is going to be make us happy.
Sure.
And it's two. And it's obviously two ways.
I hope so. if it's going to be successful.
Well, I always said that it's kind of like the relationship between the caregiver and the person who wants to be taken care of.
Sure.
The widow, the old woman, and the young guy is looking for an easy buck.
Sure. Okay.
And that, but when all of a sudden one of the persons decides that something else is important, mm-hmm. the relationship breaks up. And even in the case of, like, say, a child or in death, and each person has a different perspective of death.
Sure.
And what ends up happening is all of a sudden people look at life differently, and their desires or their aims in life change.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they don't have the things in common that were where the people are channeling their energy to the same thing. And
sure.
And so things break up after that point. That's one of the things that you find out in those relationships.
Sure. So, yeah, it's interesting you say that. I always think, or I talk to people that are looking, they're talking about a business problem that they just can't figure out or something like that. So realistically, you don't have any real problems, just perception, right? So if you have, let's just say, a customer left or something like that, and so you have a challenge with this big customer, but you still have your health, right? So losing a customer, that's a problem-ish. But if you found out that you had brain cancer, that's a problem. That's a bigger problem. One that's going to be much more difficult to solve than just finding another customer. So it's just perception of problems based on the card that you're dealt, essentially.
Yeah, well, it depends about what, like I said, what you think. And that's, again, somewhat of what you've been raised to think.
Sure.
Up to a point. And that can change really quickly, like you say, if all of a sudden... you got cancer and you're going to have a certain length of time to live, your priorities definitely change.
Yeah, you don't care about a lot of other stuff, or you realize the insignificance of a lot of stuff.
And that has an effect on any type of marriage.
I bet. I bet extremely.
Another interesting thing is to point out there's arranged marriages have worked.
Sure.
Even though you want... But it depends upon whether the people want to work together
mm-hmm.
to make things work.
Sure.
When things break up, the point is that unless you want to sit down and try to make things work,
mm-hmm.
It is possible to get things to work out. But if you don't want, and if somebody wants to control and have it their way,
right,
rather than give in, that's where I talk about control sometimes being a problem because... if you want to be in control and the other person sees difference, it's automatically going to break things up.
It's going to be a challenge. Yeah.
Pretty much it's a given.
It's very tough to have two leaders in every circumstance.
Yeah, it's going to be the it's important that people are not try to control things if they want to have a good relationship.
Sure, sure. So you're married now.
Yes.
Okay, and how long have you been married?
We've been married 26 years.
Holy cow, that's a long time. Okay. And this is marriage number two for you,
yes.
Right? Yes. Okay. How long were you married to your first wife?
24 years.
Holy cow. Man, that's a long time. That's a long time. That's a long time for anything. I can't imagine owning a business for that long. That's crazy. So, I imagine over the course of two marriages that last over a couple decades each, and you have a few kids, right?
Yes, I actually had five children. Two of them have passed away.
Okay. Sorry to hear that. But that's still, you learned a lot of stuff over that course of time. So what are some of the biggest tidbits in regards to relationships that you would like to share with our audience?
One is don't try to control things.
Okay, clear. All right, what else?
There's, I would say just appreciate the mm-hmm. other appreciate the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try, obviously, don't try to control. Again, I keep sure. coming back that whole aspect of it. And,
right.
And show your appreciation.
What if they're really a pain in the butt and you want to control? You just, you're like, oh my gosh, you keep leaving toast crumbs in the butter. We got to fix this.
So what?
Okay.
It just kind of have to put up with it and appreciate all the good things rather sure. than look at the good parts. And like I said, you can take a little broken finger and you can
sure.
Say, oh, it's a bummer, and or you can say, it's helped me some other way.
Sure.
And if you take a look at the toast crumbs in the butter,
mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Or insert problem here. Yeah. I don't really care about toast crumbs in the butter, but whatever the problem is, but every relationship has some annoyances on both ends.
Oh, that's
right?
That's also the case. I don't remember my first marriage. One of the most annoying things I guess I did was after I got done with the washcloth, I put it in a ball and threw it in the corner of the bathtub, the corner of the sink. Why okay. do you always do that type of thing?
Sure.
I don't know.
Just hoping to grow some mold, right? Yeah. It's a science experiment. I'm just going to see what color we got this time.
You never know exactly why
sure.
you do certain things. That's just the way it is.
Sure.
And but if you then all of a sudden some I didn't realize until she mentioned that I was doing that. And
right.
Like annoying. Oh, okay. Well, I'll change.
All right.
Okay. But you really have to. The other important thing is to be able to express yourself, because if the other person doesn't know what you're thinking,
mm-hmm.
in other words, a person can hold everything in and just build up anger or resentment.
Sure.
And it's really important to know what the other person, your other person is thinking, so that you can accommodate them.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that most people don't really understand. They try to hold it in, and it's not that good. It's better just to say what's on there, and if the other person doesn't accept that, well, mm-hmm. then there's an issue, that's a different issue.
Sure. Did your wife read this book?
I don't know about my first wife, but
okay. The
second wife, yes.
She did. Okay. So did she throw up any red flags or any challenges for the relationship portion or any portion of the book?
No.
No? Okay. Well, that's good. She didn't say, Bob, you're totally wrong here. Okay. Well, that's good. That's very good. We don't have time to hit every single one of the portions of the book. So what is your favorite part of the book?
I have to say one of the things I was going to point out, the end of the book, what I'm going to try to do was point out some, I can say, the basics.
Sure.
And I tried in the end of the book come to about six simple basics in life.
Okay.
So to which we, and I point up to them going through the book. And the first one was the idea, a reality of a higher level of love.
Higher level
higher
of
power,
love.
Higher power of love.
Okay, you're going to have to define that for me.
Just, I cannot define the higher power. That's
okay.
The problem. Everybody says it's a God, it's nature, whatever it is.
You're talking about a higher energy, or you're talking love specifically?
I don't know.
Specifically?
I'm saying a higher power.
Okay.
You can say, some people think of it as nature, some people think it as a God. I don't care how you think of it. I'm just saying if there's a higher power of love.
Okay.
And I'm saying that because of the concept that we have free will, which mm-hmm. a controlling individual, if there is a creator,
mm-hmm.
A creator that is controlling would allow free will.
Sure. Okay.
The second is that that people are more loving, are able to do unusual things, work miracles, whatever
sure.
type of thing.
Sure.
Are able to do things that the average person can't.
Right.
I'm saying they're more in contact with a higher power,
okay,
and they're loving and more in contact and able to do things that would indicate a higher power is loving.
Okay,
and so that's first of all one of the prerequisites, because I was talking about that, and there's a second universal. There's two universal basics I give, and the second universal basic is that of virtue and vice.
Okay,
good and bad, whatever.
Sure,
they exist.
Okay,
and. And that doesn't make any difference if they're aliens that created, interfered with our DNA. It doesn't really make any difference. And it's virtue and vice is the same for any UFO people or whatever it is,
right.
Intelligence, where that, it doesn't make any difference.
Sure.
Another one that I give basic is that I do accept the fact that we have a computer brain. Mm-hmm. That's a one of the basics that other creatures, that there's intelligence, there's a brain, that there is intelligence in a certain way. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what level it exists in different animals or whatever it is.
Right.
But then there's the next basic was that there's an independent consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It exists in us, and I don't know if it exists in other creatures. Maybe
maybe
dogs, cats, I don't know.
Sure.
That's another one. Another basic is free will.
Okay.
And the third, final basic that I give is that we take something with us when we die.
What is that something?
Well, if you think about it, virtue and vice transcend. They're universal.
Okay.
They go beyond physical reality, mm-hmm. to any reality that exists.
Mm-hmm.
Love can extend to the highest level that exists.
Sure.
Well, if that is the case, then virtue and vice, our independent consciousness, can take with us
mm-hmm.
anything we've gained in the concept of virtue.
Okay.
And it can hurt us in anything we lost in related to vice that we've been involved with.
Who defines what virtue is good and what vice is bad?
Well, that's going to be, I would say, the simplest way to that, look at that, that which is loving
mm-hmm.
is virtue.
But there may be some people that believe that their virtue is indulging in delicious food, where to somebody else that may be a vice. And some may be that keeping myself healthy is a virtue, or somebody else says, why are you wasting your time? That's a vice.
Well, it depends upon, there's a lot in how you look at things, whether it's virtue or
right.
vice.
Right, sure, sure.
It's important. I like the story that it was an old story of a Native American grandfather talking to his grandson.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, inside of us we have two wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And they're constantly fighting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
One wolf is that of virtue.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically of love, caring, forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the second one is a wolf of anger and revenge and hatred.
Sure.
And the grandparent, a boy looks at his parents and says, which one will win?
Mm-hmm.
And the grandfather said, whichever one you feed.
Sure.
And we don't think about that too often, but which one we feed is really important when it comes to virtue and vice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm saying I think it's really important to concentrate on the concept of virtue, because I do think that we take with us, and that will affect. And I did get a little bit into the concept of reincarnation, which I wanted to bring out, was the test that people have done on the there's one woman who did the test on take a hypnosis of thousands of people.
Sure.
And different time elements. And she set out to prove that it doesn't exist. And eventually.
Does not exist.
It does not exist.
Okay.
Eventually she says, not only do I know it exists, I mean, can I say it exists? I know it exists, she
mm-hmm.
said. And then she basically said that, interestingly enough, that people, and this is what, from a Christian standpoint, it's interesting if you look at it, that when we die, there are various, in the Buddhist, there are various levels of heaven and hell.
Okay.
So for the various people and the various lives that we have, we go to a different level. And what this one woman was hypnotizing these people, said that 85% of the people that said they'd come back said they had a choice to come back.
Okay.
And they actually had a bit of a choice in where they were reincarnated.
Okay.
And that they came back mainly to improve their level, or to help.
Sure.
The people that are still behind.
Okay.
The Dalai Lama, basically he said he forego nirvana to come back to help the other people.
Okay.
And I try to look at it in the concept of heaven. I have a Christian standpoint, because I say there is a heaven and hell immediately when we die.
Okay.
But we have a choice. Now, interesting enough, Dr. Ian Stevenson did a lot of the research on children that remembered being past lives when they're first a couple of years old, and you start to talk about who they were and different relatives and where they lived. And basically, they checked these things out and found out they do. And then he was talking about different people that when they have a child would die from a certain type of, let's say, were shot, or the child that they remember, person they remember being, and they have a birthmark right where that actual...
I remember that portion in the book. That was interesting.
Yeah, it was. The guy, the one was remembered being a person. I can't remember the exact name. Mm-hmm. He had these birthmarks with all over his chest. And when they went back and took a look at the person he was remembered being, apparently he had he was shot, and they had a police photograph of the shotgun that had hit him. And the birthmarks on that person, the child, exactly... or exact location of the birthmarks and the person that had been shot.
Sure.
That he had remembered being.
Interesting.
There's many different ones, reasons to believe this.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, one of the things we talk about is the fact that in when I talk about reality is that physical reality is based on time. We only have time in physical reality, but time does not have to exist outside of physical reality.
Okay. And turns out right now we do, though.
We look at it in time to us.
Sure.
Time doesn't have to exist in physical reality, and if it doesn't exist outside of physical reality, then you cannot say that the souls were created within the time of physical reality.
Okay.
Because if if they are going to exist forever,
sure.
Well, then they had to exist before because they can't be created within something that doesn't exist outside of physical reality.
Sure. Interesting. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah. Or the how I try to explain the concept of wave energy and how physical reality is based on wave energy.
Sure.
And that if you have any control over wave energy, you can control different physical things that happen in physical reality.
Sure.
The monk, for instance, there's one over in Asia who basically can sit in a boil of boiling oil. But what he has done, he has basically got his mind into the point where he can change the wave energy that around his body to a point that the frequency of the wave deflects the heat.
Okay. For all those times you find yourself in a pot of boiling oil.
Yeah, well, in case that. But are the people that walk through hot coals.
Sure.
To a certain point is if you have a certain type of belief in a certain thing, you can actually overcome because the way you can change the wave energy associated.
I walked over hot coals, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So those are things that I try to bring up, just trying to get you to think differently.
Sure.
I'm not saying that any of these things really exist. I believe that, but okay. I don't know. I want people to start thinking beyond what they normally think.
Sure. So what is the one action step that you would want people to do after reading a book like this? Like if they set the book down, they're going to stand up, what do you want them to do?
I want them to start questioning things in their lives. I get upset with, for instance, in the concept of responsibility, I'm really upset with political partisanship, for instance.
Everybody gets upset at that.
Because... both parties have things to say which are beneficial, but everybody gets caught up in the fact that I'm right, that you're wrong. And but I want people to start thinking beyond what they not normally think. I give you an example. I always said that in the book, I point out, what do you think would work better? I said socialism or capitalism. And as I point out, either system would work if everybody was responsible to the system.
Sure.
They don't work because there's people that are not going to follow the rules.
Sure.
They don't like things, and so it doesn't work. That's one of the things I wanted to point out. I thought really interesting is the fact that capitalism, they talk about the trickle-down effect. Well, capital doesn't work because there's really no trickle-down effect until... the people that are making money don't keep hoarding the money.
Sure.
I suggested it would be really interesting if we taxed the rich on the amount of money that they mend, that they don't spend domestically.
Sure.
In other words, if you don't, you put a large amount of money tax on what they don't spend domestically, so they can make amount of money and they get to spend it. But if they don't spend it domestic, and they get their regular taxes. But then if what they don't spend domestically, they get taxed heavily to make sure that the balance of money doesn't keep going to the rich.
Sure. Interesting. Huh. That's an interesting concept.
It's something nobody really thinks about. But you have to have some way to control how much the rich do take away from the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fair. Totally fair. So tell us, where can people find your book?
I believe it's on Amazon.
Okay.
And probably from the publisher.
Okay. You hope it is. Anyways,
yeah.
What have been some of the feedback that you've gotten? Some of the reviews that you've gotten, has it been good or?
Well, yeah, the reviews that I've been getting on Amazon have been very good.
Okay.
But the I would have to say, like I said earlier, the amount of people that come to hear me talk that stay for the entire thing and buy the book afterwards.
All right.
It tells me that what I've got to say is quite interesting to them.
Sure. Do you find that people actually read the book?
What's that?
Do you find that people actually read the book?
I will find, yes, I've talked to some people that actually spent the time to read the entire book slowly.
I've had the
but they
hardest
never do,
time.
Like they never, they had to do it a little bit at a time. You can't go through that book quickly.
I've had the hardest time with I wrote the Bold Business book and getting people to, doing everything I can to get people to review it, but getting them to just read it. Forget about the review. Just getting them to read it and give me an email feedback or something like that has been the most challenging thing in the world.
I have had the same problem. I ask them, why don't you put a review through? And you get a couple of reviews and that's it.
Yeah.
And they're good reviews, but
you might, like, I gave away hundreds of books and you got a couple dozen reviews. Like, holy cow, is this just a world full of information? But unless it only takes a fraction of a second to absorb that information, I ain't got the time.
I was unfortunately, I was at a funeral a couple weeks ago. My aunt, who was 104, passed away.
Wow. And okay. Sorry, but that's a good run.
Yeah, I got a couple of my relatives said, "Oh, you really did a nice job on your book. I enjoy your book," or things like that. I got a lot of good comments from my relatives who I haven't seen in years.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That means I read it, right?
Yeah, that means.
Or presumably.
But a couple of them said I'm working my way through it.
Yeah,
he said
it's
there's
on
a
the
lot
shelf.
To absorb. There's the thing is there's so many different things that I cover, that
there are a lot.
It's tough to absorb because like I said, psychology, philosophy, and spirituality.
Yeah.
And I do talk about the subject of religion, and I came up with
it's kind of scattered throughout, from what I found.
Yeah, what I did though, I tried to put in the end to make everybody understand about what my feelings about religion are. Is that I put in the book that the religion that you belong to today has more to do with where you or your parents or grandparents were born in the world than any other individual thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if God is a loving God, which I believe. It can't be just one religion involved with it.
Sure.
What I'm saying is the right religion is the one that makes you the most loving person you can be.
Sure, fair.
And whatever one you find makes you most loving person you can be is the right religion for you.
Fair.
And that's kind of what I look at religion as.
Sure.
And it's a means to an end. It's not the end in itself. It's a means to an end.
Sure, fair enough. Well, Bob, I appreciate you stopping by. And your book, like you said, is available on Amazon. Is there anywhere else? Are there retail stores around here that have it?
I don't know. I'd have to ask my publisher. I don't know on that.
Okay. Well, if they do a little search on the interwebs for Human Understanding and Engineer's Analysis of Life, Getting to the Basics from Bob Bruce, they will find it somewhere. Awesome. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country, on the web at callsoncall.com. as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business. On the web at drawincustomers.com. And, of course, the Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as Bob Brust, author of Human Understanding, an Engineer's Analysis of Life, Getting to the Basics. That is a long title. Holy cow, I gotta work on that one. Find that on the web as well as on Amazon. Find us on this awesome radio show, Authentic Business Adventures, airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link found at drawincustomers.com. That's a ton of information for you guys. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, you know the story. Enjoy your business.